Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
Good evening. It's Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Corey LaBounty. Glad to be back with you guys. Producer extraordinary Ian Blair on the board tonight, and he'll be giving his input on the Iron Bowl and all the other topics sports related that we'll be talking about tonight. We missed you last week. Hope everybody had an outstanding Thanksgiving and was able to get plenty to eat and enjoy the Iron Bowl this weekend. And in our second segment, we'll go in depth talking about the Iron Bowl and the ramifications after the Iron Bowl. And it was just a busy sports weekend. If you were a sports fan on Saturday evening or Saturday, you had an opportunity to see some things from a historical standpoint. And one of the things that I loved the most was Sarah Fuller coming out and being the first female kicker in Power 5 history, and today she was named co-SEC Special Teams Player of the Week. And I love it just from a motivational standpoint. You heard it on the Paul Feinbaum show from 2 to 6, and this weekend, if you had an opportunity, it would have been better if Vanderbilt would have scored against Missouri, giving her an opportunity to even attempt a field goal. But just the fact that she was able to squib kick and put toe to leather in that opportunity, I absolutely love that, Ian.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, this is what we talk about constantly with sports being the big melting pot, being able to bring in so many diverse cultures and ethnicities and backgrounds. It's going to be at certain times that we have to have breakthroughs. And I've seen some people clown on the squib kick. Coach told her to squib it. That wasn't anything of a bad kick at all. It's what she was told to do. But one thing that I wanted to point out is, one, like you said, the motivational aspect, this just goes to show that even if you aren't predetermined or one of the initially looked at people for a specific career, role, or what have you, you can still grow into that and you can still adapt and change into that. Absolutely.
And you start looking at the history that she did make, again, as a Power 5 kicker, because there have been other female kickers that have participated. But just from a historical standpoint, and everybody who chimed in on Twitter, I was just happy to see it. My mom is a Vanderbilt graduate, and I know when she saw a Vanderbilt kicker, a female kicker, go out that had won the SEC championship just a few days prior in women's soccer, that's something that doesn't happen often for Vanderbilt soccer as well. My mom's one of those diehard Vanderbilt fans. No matter what the sport is, if the SEC network puts it on, she's going to watch it. And again, Sarah Fuller having an opportunity to be taken in with her teammates and taken by her teammates, I just thought that that was historical on a number of fronts, and I was just glad to see that this weekend. And you also, later on that night, you had an opportunity to see Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. And that was an exhibition. I'm not going to call it a boxing match, because you had somebody who was 56 and 51 years of age getting in the ring. And in my lifetime, those are two of the best champions outside of Muhammad Ali that you had an opportunity to see in their prime. I had an opportunity to see Mike Tyson in his prime, had an opportunity to see Roy Jones Jr. being from Pensacola in his prime. And I like the tribute that Roy Jones Jr. gave to Kobe Bryant in regards to his gloves being purple and gold, and continuing to shout out his hometown of Pensacola, Florida also, Ian.
Oh, absolutely. And again, I mean, one thing that I wanted to highlight about this fight, yes, everyone calling for either a chapter two, a second round, maybe another decision in the fight itself. That's not what this fight was about. This was guys getting out there, trying to rekindle their love for the sport and having some fun. You know, at the end of the day, you're looking to have fun just as much as anything else. Did they absolutely need to do this? No, but it was very entertaining to watch. And I still felt like Mike, if we're being competitive about it, I was still feeling like Mike was giving it to him for quite a number of occasions there. But judges are going to call tie. I didn't see the perspective of the judges. I only can see what the television broadcast is going to show us. But I really feel like going forward, there were a couple things that we learned from this fight in particular that we may see some older fighters, you know, maybe once a couple people like McGregor or, you know, what have you get up there in age, they may start doing stuff like this just to go back and relive the glory days in a sense.
An 8-round exhibition match between Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr. that only lasted 2 minutes per round. But to me, the highlight of the whole exhibition was definitely Snoop Dogg doing the commentary on this. And the fight prior to the Mike Tyson-Roy Jones Jr. fight, you had Nate Robinson, little Nate Robinson, who I do believe was a 3-time NBA slam dunk champion, had an opportunity to get into a boxing match. For some reason, he wanted to get in the ring. And Ian, you were telling me his opponent is a YouTube superstar.
Oh, absolutely. Internet sensation Jake Paul ends up getting the knockout there. And Corey, you said that Nate Robinson was a 3-time slam dunk champion, and he might have been a 4th one after how hard he slammed that mat. I mean, good grief, man.
I mean, the memes behind that, Ian, are going to be priceless. And again, Nate Robinson, probably all 5'8" of them, decided to get into a boxing ring, and you know he tried to take the fight to him. And just was not able to do so. And, you know, if you're not a professional fighter, I commend you for going out there and just trying to turn it into a street fight and just swinging. But I really thought that after Nate Robinson got knocked out, he was out cold, folks, for like maybe a minute, flat on his face. And I thought he was seriously hurt the way he took that punch to his temple. But it's a situation that where it's so easy for football stars to play basketball, for basketball players to try to throw in a 7-on-7 a game. But when you are actually a professional athlete and you step into a boxing ring, there is no fake in boxing. It's brutal. And Nate Robinson got knocked out flat on his face. Now, albeit it was entertaining, the entire match, the entire undercard was a situation that I really enjoyed to watch and had been looking forward to it because this fight got postponed on a couple of times. And here it is, Thanksgiving weekend, where you're looking for something to do behind the Iron Bowl. This was a way to end the Saturday night. So I really was looking forward to that. And as you transition into Sunday, of course, we had our NFL football, but the headline today for NFL football and here recently has been the cancellation or the postponement again of the Ravens versus the Steelers. Again, this game has been postponed now for the 3rd time, and that's due to COVID. COVID-19 has really struck the Baltimore Ravens organization. 22 players tested positive or were at high risk contact due to the COVID-19. And this is the 2nd NFL Wednesday game since 1948, folks. This Ravens versus Steelers game will be played on Wednesday at 2:40 in the afternoon. If you're Sunday, you're looking for a 2:40 kickoff, but only the 2nd time in NFL history that you'll have a Wednesday kickoff at 2:40 between the Ravens and the Steelers. That's if it does not get postponed or backed up again. And that means the Pittsburgh versus the Washington football team will now get moved to Monday night at 4 o'clock or Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock p.m. because that game was supposed to be played. But just a situation to where you hate to see COVID taking over. The Denver Broncos were really affected to where now they went to a free agent quarterback. All 3 of their available quarterbacks could not play. The Denver Broncos attempted 9 passes yesterday in an NFL football game and only completed 1 pass yesterday. But that's what happens when you bring in a free agent who has not played the quarterback position since his freshman year in college. And it's very unfortunate for the Denver Broncos, but it's something that the NFL is taking very serious. They fined the Saints $500,000 as well as a 7th-round draft pick for not wearing the mask after they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers a couple of weeks ago. So the NFL is really cracking down, and as you continue to look on the NFL sidelines, you'll you'll see a lot of masks on all the players and everyone and all personnel, whether it's pregame, during the game, and postgame. The NFL just cannot afford to miss any more contests. And this game, again, has been postponed. Ravens versus Steelers will now take place Wednesday at 2:40. Those are some of the headlines we'll be talking about in the next segment. We'll be talking about the Iron Bowl that went down on Saturday. And if you're an Auburn fan, well, we'll see what happens coming out of this break in regards to if you're tired of hearing about the Gus Bus or not.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Sports Night right here on FM Talk 106.5. Corey LeBounty along with Ian Blair joining you this Monday night. And make sure you bundle up, Mobile, because there is going to be a freeze, and you could definitely notice the change in weather with that rain that went through the area on yesterday. And as the day went on today, the temperature has steady dropped. So make sure you bundle up and take care of yourselves and cover up those heads. And I tell you, Ian, when we start talking about the Iron Bowl, you knew going in that Auburn was going to be close to a 24.5-point underdog. And you wanted, if you were an Auburn fan, just to try to stick around and give yourself some type of hope. But when you start looking at the AP Top 25 that came out, Alabama, the unanimous number one pick in the country, with Notre Dame being 2, Ohio State being 3, Clemson being 4, Texas A&M 5, Florida 6, Cincinnati 7, BYU 8, Miami 9, and Indiana 10. There's no question that Alabama is right now the number one team in the country.
Oh, absolutely not. And, Corey, we have a habit, don't we, of calling things and being able to predict things rather spectacularly on the show. I called the NBA Finals game for game, and it happened. And here you are, week after week. It's just been proven Mac for Heisman is not only legitimate, but he may be the front runner, and he may be the main conversation that people are having.
You know, I'm looking forward to the Alabama versus Florida SEC championship game, if it takes place on December 19th due to this pandemic, and we're just week to week hoping that we can get football games in. And you look at Mac Jones' numbers, you mentioned it, 18 of 26, 302 yards, 5 touchdowns, and no interceptions. I think a week ago when they played Kentucky, you saw Mac get a little bit greedy and a little bit confident. And this week he made sure he took care of the football. But I think what you really have to understand and be impressed with is with Nick Saban being out with COVID-19 and not being able to have contact with the team 90 minutes prior to kickoff and during the game, if that's actually what happened, you're in a situation for the Alabama Crimson Tide to where Coach Sarkisian, he did not miss a beat. I thought that Alabama started off a little slow offensively after that first drive, but then you really saw Alabama defensively rise to the occasion. They really disrupted Patrick Nix, and Mac Jones found the best wide receiver in the country in Devontae Smith. And I said it about 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, I really think that Jalen Waddle is the most explosive Alabama football player. And you start talking about Najee Harris is probably the best running back in the country. But Devontae Smith, when you start looking at what he means to this Alabama football team and the consistency that you get out of Devontae Smith week in and week out, it's second to none.
Did you say Patrick Nix?
Excuse me, Bo Nix. I probably did.
Okay, I was about to say. I was about to say Patrick Nix. We gotta correct this on air. I don't want to have some old heads be yelling at us in the text lines, man. I gotta protect my already diminishing self esteem as a college student. However, yes, Devontae Smith, best wide receiver in the country. That is hands down. He will be the first taken in the draft should he go either this year, next year, or whenever. Same thing goes for Najee. Those two guys are top five players in the nation overall, and it's not even a question. However, I do want to bring up this conversation now because I had called out Dylan Moses that morning, just talking with people in a private conversation, about the Iron Bowl, about football in general with some friends of mine, and I had said that Dylan Moses needed to show up for the defense to be consistent, and I needed Dylan Moses to be playing like he was and the beast that he was before that ACL injury. And boy, boy, oh boy, did that first half not look good for him. But he turned it around, had a couple of stops, had a couple of good hits late in the third that really kind of got him energized. And, you know, even whenever Auburn was trying their best to at least get some sort of highlight play or anything, Dylan was just there over and over again. And if it wasn't him, it was Patrick Surtain or, you know, Job or anybody else that Dylan's able to call out and say, hey, you know, get 28, get 32, like, get these guys, let's play our zone, let's play our game, don't let them burn you off the start. And one of the greatest things that I think people really underrate about being a middle linebacker and having to be a captain in general of either the offense or the defense or having to supervise those guys in a sense is leadership. Leadership and culture are two things that I highly regard and that I highlight often whenever we're talking about championship-minded teams. There's a mindset, there's a culture there. And Dylan Moses is definitely cut from the same cloth as guys like Ray Lewis, guys like C.J. Mosley, who were great leaders as well as great players.
Well, you start talking about this Alabama defense, and freshman Malachi Moore has made, to me, is the SEC freshman of the year. But this Alabama defense was able to get 4 sacks and 8 tackle for losses. And when you start putting that type of pressure to a quarterback like Nix, it really gives Alabama an opportunity. And you're starting to see when Auburn had to settle for field goals and you're down 21-3 and then Alabama comes right back out to start the second half and scores another 14 points, you know you're in the type of hole that Auburn's not built, especially on the road, to come back. And I gave you a little tease about the Gus Bus. When you start talking about his overall record against Alabama in Tuscaloosa, you start talking about Auburn on the road against LSU, and then you start talking about Auburn on the road at Georgia. I do believe Gus Malzahn's record is 0-12 against those three schools on the road. So there's really no place like home for the Auburn Tigers. And you start talking about Bigsby, the running back for Auburn, and he was not 100%. And in order to get the Gus Bus moving and going, you have to be able to run the football as a football team. And you start talking about Auburn's leading rusher only had 57 yards, and Auburn only had 120 yards as a team. And when you look at the gift that they were given, they did a great job of recovering Brian Robinson's fumble on the 4-yard line and marching 96 yards and against Alabama's starting defense. But it was a little bit too late in the contest that they put 7 on the board, and is the first touchdown that Alabama gives up in some over 12 quarters of football.
I mean, when we're talking about clamps, there is no team that is like Alabama in that regard. And one thing I have to bring up about Tank Bigsby, yes, he was not 100%, but you would rather have him on the field being able to play at whatever capacity he is versus not having him at all. And despite that, he is still a 5-star recruit, freshman or not. He still has there's a certain level of skill that he still retains and that he was still able to do. And he had a couple runs that were effective where he would break a couple tackles, maybe, you know, tank a couple hits and get some positive yards there. But overall, I mean, clearly you could see that he was injured. Clearly you could see that something was up because he rushed 11 times and didn't even crack 40-plus yards. And that's 3.5 yards a carry on average. And one thing I have to bring up here is that, like you said, it's the Gus Bus. In order to be able to move such a thing as a bus, you have to be able to run. You have to be able to consistently have that source of offense to go to. But whenever that's taken away and you have to rely on Bo Nix, this is a criticism that I have of Bo Nix, especially where is Bo Nix by himself going to be a winning quarterback, even after college, if that winds up being a possibility for him? Is Bo Nix the type of guy you want on your team to be able to lead an offense and to be able to create for others as well as himself whenever it comes to running, being able to scramble, get out of the pocket, run jet sweeps, run several plays? Bo is versatile if you look at just the basic level of what he brings. But when you try to get into, okay, well, what happens when I take away this aspect of your offense or this aspect of your offense? You can't take everything away from a great player, but I'm not sure that Bo is such a great player in that aspect.
Bo is better at Jordan-Hare Stadium, without question. I mean, he threw for 227 yards, but did have two interceptions. And those interceptions wound up being costly for the Auburn Tigers. But, again, Auburn's rushing game has to be better. And you look at their phenomenal wide receiver in Seth Williams only having three receptions and dropping a wide-open touchdown that would have given – cut the Alabama lead to 21-10 at that point in time. That's just something that the Auburn Tigers cannot afford. Coming back out of this break, we'll talk a little bit about Auburn, Texas A&M, and Alabama's opponent next week as well. And we'll take a look at the top 25 rankings and see what you think about that as well.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Corey LeBounty and Ian Blair joining you on this blustery Monday evening. And we were talking about the Iron Bowl as Alabama defeated Auburn 42-13. And we were talking about some of the statistics that went into that game. And, you know, going in, if you're an Alabama fan, you just wanted to get out of the Iron Bowl healthy. You wanted revenge for last year's loss at Auburn. It's a game in which Mac Jones had a couple of interceptions, and one of them was taken almost 100 yards to the house, which to me could have been the difference in that game a year ago. But Alabama was able to prevail without Nick Saban on the sidelines, and to me that was what was very impressive, and it just goes to show the type of organization and foundation that Nick Saban has provided. Whether he would have been out for the Georgia game when it was the false positive test that was given to him actually being out this game, I think it helps not only Steve Sarkisian and showing the type of coach that he really is. He's not wet behind the ears. I mean, this is a coach who's been the head coach at Washington. He's been the head coach at USC and has had wins there. The offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons, and I know you were probably happy that the Atlanta Falcons did dismiss him as the coordinator, but he came home to Nick Saban and has really create a historical offense this season for the Alabama Crimson Tide. And a lot of numbers this weekend. We talked at the beginning of the show about Sarah Fuller and the history that she made as the first female kicker in a Power 5 game. But, you know, I'm going to give you these stats. And when you rush for 8 touchdowns and over 400 yards of rushing by one running back, that's what Jarrett Patterson had from Buffalo, and those type of numbers are groundbreaking and record-breaking.
Those are what us younger folks call godlike, God tier. That is the perfect, like almost a perfect game that you could have in regards to virtually every single stat. I don't know how many rushes he had, but I assume it was in the category of 20 to 30, if I had to assume rush attempts there.
It doesn't say how many he had. It just said he had 409 yards on the ground. It's the second most in FBS history. And his coach pulled him, and his coach didn't realize how close he was to the record. And had he not pulled him, he would have allowed him to set that record. But 8 rushing touchdowns and 409 yards, it's pretty impressive.
I have to question why the coach wasn't looking at the scoreboard or looking at the stat sheet. Because if I've got a guy going for a record, I'm not about to pull him. The Lakers didn't pull Kobe when he was near 80. They didn't do that with the Suns didn't do that with Devin Booker when he was dropping 70 against my Celtics. No, you let the guy play and you let him have his record. Let him have his night.
I agree with you. There's no reason to pull him. He's already made that historical type of night. Continuing to let him get as much as he can, and unfortunately the coaching staff did not do that. And when you start looking at these SEC scores from this weekend, Florida struggled a little bit with Kentucky to begin the game and then pulled away from them. Kadarius Toney, the 251 product from Blount High School, had another outstanding special teams game as he took a punt return 50 yards to the house, and he was also named the co-SEC Special Teams Player of the Week along with Sarah Fuller. Kadarius Toney's very explosive, and when you start talking about the Florida Gators getting it in gear, they had a big-time win over Kentucky 34-10. Of course, I mentioned Missouri blanks Vanderbilt 41-0. Ole Miss wins the Egg Bowl, and Lane Kiffin has created a lot of buzz there in Oxford, and they beat Mississippi State 31-24. Georgia crushes South Carolina 45-16, and after that 41-0 loss that Vanderbilt suffered this week, yesterday, Derek Mason was relieved of his coaching duties by the Commodores, and that was probably done because of recruiting coming up. The early recruiting period is here in December, and then again in February is the second signing period. So if you're going to get a new coach in there, you want the new recruits to know exactly who's going to be that head coach. But again, all signs pointing for a Florida versus Alabama SEC championship. And we'll see how Texas A&M, who did defeat the Florida Gators head-to-head, they have the Auburn Tigers. How will the Auburn Tigers bounce back from the Iron Bowl? They weren't 100% healthy from the offensive line standpoint or from a running back standpoint. And Jimbo Fisher has his Aggies ranked number 5 in the country. Auburn is at 22 in. So what do you expect to see out of the Auburn Tigers as they take on Texas A&M?
I think that Auburn is going to come out a bit. They're going to come out a bit hungry. They're going to try to make something happen. But I think very quickly, if Texas A&M is as real and legitimate a contender as they have performed this season, they will most likely put this thing away and put Auburn to sleep by the end of the third quarter here. I do not expect this to be a close game at all. I expect Auburn to get the doors blown off of them again. And I think that's kind of in the way that Auburn has really kind of it'll be almost symbolic. A sort of an Iliadic-like ending almost to the season, where you have a depiction of the season in the final game. Auburn starting out strong, looking like they were going to do some damage, maybe knock off a couple teams that are usually some contenders, and then just down the way, they don't have the consistency and they run out of gas there the last two games of the season, and they end up going 5-5.
It could be huge for Auburn if they're able to get this win. I mean, if they're able to secure this game, you're looking at possibly senior night or senior day for those seniors playing their last game at Jordan-Hare. You know the NCAA is allowing players to come back for an extra year of eligibility, but those who want to move on possibly to the NFL will play their last game as a senior at Jordan-Hare. Right now, Texas A&M is a 7-point favorite in that game, and you're looking at if Auburn's able to win that game and move on to 6-3, then they face Mississippi State as they get ready to wind up the season. And that could possibly put them at 7-3, getting ready to go to a bowl game. So, you know, all hope is not lost. Wasn't the type of season that the Auburn Tigers would have liked to have had. But I think that you can get a little momentum going into postseason, and especially recruiting, if you're able to beat Texas A&M. And if you're an SEC fan, you want to see Texas A&M win the game because you want them to have an opportunity. If Alabama beats Florida, knocks them out, the committee normally thinks about what you've done last. And Texas A&M having that head-to-head win over Florida, you're kind of looking at yourself, all right, now how do we get two SEC teams into the college football playoffs? And I think that's how it has to go down in order for that to happen, because I think Alabama is the only team in the country that can falter at this point in time. But let's talk about the Alabama-LSU matchup. LSU continues to have players to opt out. Texas A&M beats them 20-7 this past week, and Ed Orgeron is dealing with the exodus of a couple of his players, one of them being his star wide receivers.
I mean, the outcome of this game is going to be like David and Goliath if there is no extra force involved. This is going to be a thrashing of which the program may have never even seen before, to be honest with you. I expect Alabama to win by 35, if not 40 something points here. I mean, this is not even a contest. But I do want to issue some caution to Alabama fans. don't be concerned about your record at this point. You're going to the SEC championship no matter what. The problem is if somebody goes down, if somebody is injured,
yes.
if we have a freak accident.
You want to stay healthy.
Again, you want to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my opinion, if I'm Nick Saban, if I'm Steve Sarkisian, if I'm this Alabama staff here trying to figure this out, honestly, I play the starters the first half, and I just come out with guys like Bryce Young and just let the young guys get some reps that second half against LSU.
If the score dictates Alabama to do so, I know they will. Nick Saban likes to play his guys normally through that first series of the third quarter, but I'm with you. I mean, with LSU wide receiver Terrence Marshall opting out, it'll be interesting to see now how Alabama decides to get that payback. Right now, Alabama is a 28.5-point favorite down in Death Valley, and that hasn't happened for a very long time. You're looking at LSU with a 3-4 record. Again, the mass exodus of players, losing 19 out of 22 starters to begin this season to the NFL, did not help their cause any. But Mac Jones can continue to get an impressive resume ready for the Heisman, as well as Najee Harris and Devontae Smith. I just think that you're hit the nail on the head, Ian. The biggest thing for the Alabama Crimson Tide taking on the LSU Tigers down in Death Valley is staying healthy, because Alabama has done a good job covering their point spread throughout this season. And to make it through these next 3 weeks, when you start talking about Death Valley, when you start talking about Arkansas and then Florida, you want to stay healthy in those games, and you want to become SEC champions through all the adversity that all of college football and really all of athletics has dealt with in the COVID-19 pandemic. You want to be able to say that you truly did it at 100% and were healthy from start to finish. When we come back, we're going to wrap up sports night talking a little South Alabama basketball, and there's some NFL action tonight in which Jalen Hurts we'll get an opportunity, hopefully, to touch the field for the Philadelphia Eagles.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Like to jam out to some AC/DC every now and then. Pardon my rock preference. Corey, we were talking over the break, and I have to bring this up before we jump in. I've heard some people talking about, and you brought this up over the break, over the last segment here, where you talked about the possibility of a second SEC team being involved in the college football playoff again. Now, we had this problem with the BCS where you had Alabama and LSU. You had Auburn make it several times. Alabama's dynasty with the under the Nick Saban era started in the BCS. And ultimately, the SEC representation was one of the big reasons why we instituted the college football playoff, to limit the teams that were making it from a specific conference. Then we had 2018, where it was an all-SEC final again. And now we have the problem where some people are wanting to come up with a new system, maybe expand the college football playoff, and then we have the SEC whiners. When I'm just gonna address this here to people that are still trying to, who have some preconceived notion that the SEC is not an elite conference or the most elite conference in the nation. And I'm sorry, Corey, but I'm gonna sound like Stephen A. Smith here. I have to put my analyst cap on here. The best teams have gone to the college football playoff every single year. This is a fact statistically. This is a fact empirically. Whenever you look at the data or the numbers, the advanced analytics, any numbers that you like, any set of statistics out there that you want to look at, the best teams have gone to the college football playoff every single year. And if they didn't belong in the college football playoff, they went out the first round and it wasn't a problem. However, this is where I have to kind of answer the questions here of is a second SEC championship or a team in the championship a good thing? I would argue yes, whether that's Texas A&M, maybe Florida gets in on a bye or something of that nature, maybe they sneak in at the last minute of that fourth seed. But I have to address this. Two SEC teams is not a bad thing. Two SEC teams is a good thing because it shows that there is a level of greatness, a level of a certain level of pride and equity that you can try to achieve. It sets a standard for everyone else to try to reach. Why would you not have that in the first place?
I think you need it. I mean, you start talking about right now the rankings again. Alabama 1, Notre Dame 2, Ohio State 3, Clemson 4. Dalton and I talked about it a couple weeks ago. At this point in time, Ohio State is 4-0 and has to play two remaining games at Michigan State and at home against Michigan in order to finish their season. And then they're only at 6-0 with the conference championship coming that will possibly move them to 7-0. I just don't think that's enough for me. In order, when you start looking at the SEC having a 10-game regular season against all-conference teams, I know that the COVID has wreaked havoc in this situation, but to me, Clemson right now has done enough to get in. They still have to possibly play Notre Dame in the ACC championship, Notre Dame being at number 2. Ohio State sitting there at 3. Texas A&M, they must beat Auburn in order to get in. And you're looking at Florida. Florida does not need a blowout loss to Alabama in the SEC championship game, and they still have a couple of games that they have to take care of this week because Tennessee is going to have a little say-so in that also. They're having a horrible season. But, again, I think that the SEC, normally every year they beat up on each other and they normally deserve to have two teams in, and I think you'll see that again this year. Whether it is Florida, whether it is Texas A&M, you know Alabama's going to be in, so it'll be interesting to see. Also, from a basketball standpoint this past week, as everyone was eating their turkey, South Alabama got their – men and women's basketball season started. Coach Terry Fowler, they won 70-40 over the University of Mobile on Wednesday night. And tomorrow at noon at the Mitchell Center, the Lady Jaguars will take on Tulane at noon. So if you're looking for some afternoon lunch break action, come on out to the Mitchell Center and support the Lady Jaguars as they take on the Lady Green Wave of Tulane at 12 o'clock noon. The men jump back in action tonight, tomorrow night as well. They'll be playing Emmanuel. The men split games. They went 1-1 this week, a situation where they were able to beat the University of Mobile. They were able to also beat Florida Atlantic, 2-1 rather, because they lost yesterday to Jacksonville State 77-73. The Jaguars dug themselves a hole, but basketball looks different. At the Mitchell Center, the lower bowl, all the seating in the end zones and around the court is pushed back in. The only tables that are on the arena floor are the scores table and the two media tables. So that gives a different look to college basketball during this pandemic. But South Alabama, the men, again, they do play tomorrow at 6 o'clock p.m. against Emmanuel College. And then they have a big one. South Alabama travels to Auburn and plays on the SEC Network on Friday at 8 o'clock p.m. So that will be a great game to watch if you're a Jaguar fan. You remember last year, Auburn beat South Alabama at the buzzer at the Mitchell Center because Auburn was able to get two or three possessions in that game. But looking forward to seeing Richie Riley and his team this year and Terry Fowler and his team. If you're looking for some basketball, the Mitchell Center is the place to be tomorrow starting at noon. The women play Tulane and the men play tomorrow night at 6. So that's going to be some great action for the South Alabama football team. We mentioned Jalen Hurts getting ready to play tonight against the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson trying to get back to his winning ways. He was an early candidate for NFL MVP as we started. And when you start talking about the NFC East, the Giants at 4-7 are in first place and will do so without Daniel Jones, their quarterback, who played in the Senior Bowl. He has a hamstring injury, but that whole entire division is a mess.
I mean, it's not even the NFC East anymore. They don't even deserve to be named after a direction. It's the NFC. It's the NFC Least. It's the NFC Least.
It is.
Every single team in that division just needs to tank.
Has a losing record, and your Atlanta Falcons got a huge W. And since you fired the head coach and you made that GM
4-2 since firing Dan Quinn. 4-2, man.
And again, they heard your speech, and now your Falcons are 4-2. One of those losses were to the Saints. But again, you're talking about trying to get this NFL season done and completed with this pandemic, trying to get college basketball started during this pandemic, and also trying to conclude college football, and you know, just so much going on from a sporting standpoint, and we love to bring it to you right here on Sports Night. We had somebody think, does Bo Nix have it? I think Bo Nix has it. He's just got to learn how to be consistent and do it on the road as well as at home. Do I think Bo Nix got better this season as a quarterback? I personally do not think he got better. And I don't know if that comes from a quarterback standpoint, an offensive coordinator standpoint. Doesn't matter. Chad Morris, Gus Malzahn have plenty of opportunities to continue to get this young man better as he prepares up for his upcoming junior season. But the Alabama Crimson Tide rolling the Iron Bowl. The Auburn Tigers looking to bounce back, so we'll come back next Monday night. Hopefully Dalton Orwig will be back with us. And again, Ian Blair's done a wonderful job sitting in tonight, running the board as he always does. And hope everyone bundles up and has a great Monday night. For Sports Night, I'm Corey Labonte.
Have a good week, everybody.